Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Raw Talks podcast, episode number 8. Today we have a guest with us, and we'll be talking about fawning and people pleasing. But first, yeah, Simba and I, we are from Living with the Spirit, Chiang Mai, Thailand. We focus on helping people creating their dream lives. Living their personal truth, help to heal themselves deeply and to live their purpose and to also create their dream lives. And we do that through mentorship programs, transformation retreats, and also our upcoming Somatic Healing Academy. But let's introduce our guests. Simba? Do you want to do the honors?
Okay, so we got Joan McDonald's with us today, and partially my TRE teacher, or one of my TRE teacher, and very, very good person when it comes to talking about behaviors and nervous system, seen through the autonomous reactions that we have, like the automated responses that we have, not that I think I'm gonna act in a certain way, how my body instinctually acts. And also you're very good and always teaching me a lot about behaviors, like how and why we have different human behaviors, which I continuously learn just being around you, right? So I would say you're a nervous system expert, although you might not always like the title, but you know, you're really interested in it and you're really invested in it. And I'm gonna let you introduce yourself a little bit. I think that's always a good start to kind of share where you're coming from.
Great, thank you. Well, thank you, Sarah and Simba, for asking me to be part of your podcast. It's really nice to be sharing this space with you. And so your audience knows, presently I'm in Chiang Mai, Thailand as well, even though we're not in the same space this weekend. Yeah. We were a couple weekends ago. So that was lovely to spend time with you in your beautiful space here in Thailand and living with the spirit. It was a beautiful weekend and I so much enjoyed reconnecting with you folks. So thank you very kindly. It was lovely. So I'm from Canada. My background is very quickly. I'm a social worker from way back, but mainly my work has been in the area of education, training and education. And I think probably the most relevant background I have is the fact is that I'm a TRE trainer, tension trauma release exercise trainer. I've established actually a number of training programs here in Asia. That's been the last 11 years of my life. It's been spent part-time here in Asia, establishing programs in Japan and Singapore and Indonesia and Thailand. And and I'm also the trainer for Canada. Although that some of this work is starting to come to an end, which is actually by plan. It's time for me to start to maybe put some energies in some other directions in my life. But that is part of my background. So I love teaching and I love sharing information that is really helpful for people in their own growth, their own development, and in really being able to fully live life from a place of aliveness. Yeah. And so that's really my passion.
Yeah, and that's where we share our passion, because Simba and I are so devoted to our own healing and to really feel that aliveness in body, mind, spirit. And so we really share the passion there. And that's why you are the perfect host or guest for this topic, which is fawning. And people might not know what fawning means, but that's why I also put in the title, like, why you can't stop people pleasing. Mm-hmm. And I just want to give a little bit of background why I wanted to have this conversation. And it's, as many people know, Simba and I are very devoted to our own healing. And I have started to realize that I have fawning, that I am people pleasing, but not in a way that I think that people maybe see it, because people feel like I have a lot of authority, that I am very like strong-willed and things like that. But I see on the inside that I'm people-pleasing. It's very subtle. Very, very subtle. So as I shed layers, this has come up to the surface. But also many people that I work with, especially women, they ask me about people pleasing. They want to know more. They're like, why am I people pleasing? This is such a big part of my life. And why can't I stop people pleasing? What does it come from? And all these questions. And it's just so obvious. And then this fawning started to, I mean, I've known about it for a long time, but and that it's a nervous system response. And yeah, so let's dive into fawning and people pleasing.
Sure.
I'll just hand it over to you, Jo.
Okay. Well, actually, there's a psychotherapist, and he's and a complex trauma therapist, Pete Walker, actually coined the term fawning, the fawn response. And he did that to describe the very instinctive response resulting from sometimes our early childhood, our childhood traumas. And so that this response is actually when we develop people-pleasing as a way of protecting ourselves, as a way of sort of merging our, our desires, our wants, our needs with another. And doing that, it's usually done in an attempt to feel safe, and therefore is often done within the context of a circumstance or a situation where we may not feel safe. And I think it's important to understand that when we feel safe, don't feel safe, doesn't mean we're not safe. And I think that distinction is really important, that it's our perception of safety, not necessarily what's always real. And meaning that, you know, then our nervous system responds to that immediately. And so I think that, people tend to know, have heard about fight, flight, and freeze responses that are part of our autonomic nervous system response to keep us safe. Fawning is somewhat of a newer term for people, or a newer defense mechanism that we've identified, that's been identified in our responses to lack of safety. But I think it's important that fawning is a behavioral response, which is as well. And that behavioral response, I think, tends to sometimes appear not exactly what it truly is. And I think that's the subtlety that you've been talking about in your own life, that is quite subtle. Because sometimes we can say, well, we're just really caring people, and we are, you know, it's very different from being compassionate and caring. Yeah. It goes beyond that. It goes to a place of behaving in a way that denies who I really am in the situation.
Yeah.
And that denial causes us often pain and suffering. And we may not even be aware of that it's coming out of the fawning response that we've learned early in childhood to cope with life.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I see in the people that I work with is that it's if many of them have developed fawning as a response to one of the parents,
mm-hmm.
To feel loved and to feel cared for, and to sometimes it's been aggressive and hostile and even violent. So they mm-hmm. develop this fawning response, people-pleasing response to protect themselves, mm-hmm. to absolutely protect themselves. And then what I see is that it continues through life, that they have this response, even that's what you mentioned, that even though they are safe, the organism doesn't believe it's safe, and the pattern is not it's become a habit and a pattern that is very, very, very deep.
Yeah, exactly. And it really affects one's relationships, whether they're like work relationships, love relationships, and because the person when they're fawning are not coming from an authentic self. And they're actually coming from a place of more of that freeze response we talk about, where we're disconnecting. We've disconnected from ourselves. We disconnected with our needs, our desires, our wants, our boundaries. And as a result of that, then we end up losing that sense of self. And that can be, as I say, quite painful and so on. So we then use other behaviors that, you know, like trying to flatter the person or trying to appease them to avoid conflict, for example. I think avoiding conflict is a big one, that people will do a lot of fawning around avoiding their fear of conflict. So that appeasing is really a way of protecting themselves, but often at times when maybe protection isn't truly needed, but is perceived as such, and then gets in the way of the person's living who they really are, living their real life.
Could you say that the fawning is a way of kind of losing yourself as a very young age? And since you've been fawning from a very young age, then you never really experienced who you really are and what are my needs, what are my desires, mm-hmm. what does my heart truly want, what is my boundaries. And that's why it can be very difficult to stop.
Yes,
definitely. Fawning.
Definitely. It's not, and it's so unconscious and it's so automatic. And that's what makes it such a challenge with it, is the unconscious responses that the person has lived throughout their whole life in situations, in relationships, in work situations, where there's stress or there is some kind of level of either real or perceived threat. And so the person's constantly in that pattern, chronic pattern of how they're living their lives. And it is a challenge. And I think people need to, recognize that maybe this is you have to first recognize something before you can begin to say, I want to do something. And often we know there's something not quite right, but we may not know exactly what it is. And that's why this kind of discussion for your audience is important, for people to maybe become aware, maybe this could be me, you know, and maybe I want to explore it a little more in my life.
Yeah. Simba, do you have?
Yeah. No, just as we were, have a little visitor. If the camera went dark.
Oh, we did it.
little fly. Well, we were talking before we started a little bit about, because a lot, when I look at people pleasing, people say how much it affects you and how it disrupts you. But we were also talking about how it actually affects other people around you, right? Not that we're intentionally going and damaging other people, but it does affect other people around us. And you were mentioning a little bit about, you know, the person that can never say yes to anything. What would you like to do? I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, that kind of classic interaction where you're kind of pushing, you're looking for an answer, you're looking for a boundary, and you cannot find it, right? You don't know how to relate to the other person. And I think that's also very interesting, you know, from that perspective, that it's not just you. You're actually affecting people around you because others don't feel safe because you're kind of looking for someone to say a boundary. This is a yes, this is a no. If you're never getting a boundary for someone else, I think it will be very hard to relate to that person, and you will probably feel a little bit diminished, or I'm taking advantage of this person because I'm just doing what I want to do and I never get a reciprocal answer. How would you say, how can someone from the outside help someone that is in fawn, right? Like if you're a friend or a colleague or spouse or...
Well, I think one of them is to recognize that this is actually a response that is a pattern, you know, a behavioral pattern with the person. And they cannot just suddenly turn and change on a dime. And I think that's the most important thing. And even having the person not responding from a reactive place, which tends to be what we do when we don't really understand what's happening, because all that does is create more lack of safety. And the fawning gets more deeper, you know. So it is about trying to create safety, even around a discussion about this is what I'm noticing. You know, every time we do this, you know, I ask you about this. I'm always the one having to make all the decisions in this relationship because you never have any input into that. Well, that can be very challenging for someone who's on this side of the relationship. And so I think it's those kinds of patterns that if they can create enough safety to have discussion about it. And then also, I mean, I think the biggest thing is to, the person needs to find some support and help for themselves, right? And part of that is to begin to calm their nervous system down, as well as having some support around beginning to change some of the behaviors that are very unconscious and very automatic. It's almost being on autopilot.
Yeah. 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 That's what I notice also in myself and in others, that it's a, that it's almost like a that it's come a part of their personality.
Yes.
In some cases. And but what I see with the women that I work with is that they are so receptive to, they just deeply want to change. And what I see is the huge, like, key is when I start to teach them about the nervous system, because and the polyvagal curve. So when people get an it's like a model, and they can see, oh, and then they start to, like, between the sessions, they have experiences, and they come back and they're like, wow, I really do this, I really do that. And the fact that they're not doing anything wrong. It's like they believe that it's, I'm doing it. I should stop doing it. Why can't I stop doing this? I know I should do different. But they don't understand is that it's a deep, deep automated response, as you say, that is coming from the nervous system, that is trained most likely before they even start to remember. And that it's not, they're not doing anything wrong. And when they understand that this is caused from the lack of safety, then it's like, oh, it's not me. It's my circumstances. And now I can do something about it. I have the power in my own hands. Those sort of, like, the liberation in that.
Absolutely. And I think that that's the freedom that people start to want. They see the potential that this can change, I can change in myself, right? And I think that one of the things that's really important is, if we think about it, that there is this connection of that freeze, disconnection, dissociative response that's tied into the fawning response. So there's that disconnection from self. Then you think about, well, what does one need to do? One is to begin to reconnect with oneself, finding tools and strategies that help them, and probably with some guidance with others like yourselves, to help them begin to feel into their own body. See, there's a difference. So I know for myself, and I, as a woman, I know, and growing up in a childhood that where I had my own traumas and so on, that I often have fawning experiences myself. And I think that I have fawning experiences, but I also have experiences where I think, and this has been really interesting for me to explore, where sometimes I really don't care about my answer to something. Like, I'm not fawning. It's not that important to me. You decide. I don't really care, you know? And I've had to distinguish between that response and a response that was more about, I'm afraid to say, I'm trying to stop the person's response that I know I'm going to get. So I'm just going to tell him what he wants to hear or she wants to hear. And so it's starting to be able to work within oneself in their own body response to be able to distinguish between these things in themselves. Like, what is it that, you know, am I connected to my body right now? Can I feel my heart rate? Do I feel my breathing right in this moment? Those subtle felt senses in my body. And am I responding from that place? Or is there just nothing there? I can't connect with anything, and I'm on that automatic pilot. So it's about helping to find space between automatic pilot and being able to choose my responses. And that's why I think there are, you know, different modalities out there and so on that can begin to help people calm their nervous system to create space so that they can begin to start choosing rather than being on this automatic pilot. So things like TRE and other kinds of, somatic experiencing and other kinds of modalities can be quite helpful, I think, in beginning to work with this whole process that people might engage in to start to change responses in life.
How would you say, so let's talk a little bit about TRE. It's our common denominator between the three of us. And so how would you say that TRE would help with fawning or people pleasing?
Yeah, I'm not sure it would do. So what I would say, it's probably foundational to people beginning to reconnect with themselves in terms of reconnecting with their own bodies. And there still would need to be other resources and supports around the whole behavioral piece, like making other behavioral choices. And because what happens is when you're in that fawning response, like it's like there's been no other. And for some people, if the early trauma was very extensive, there's no other options. There's no other skills developed. And so I think that there are skills that need to be developed along the way of healing. So to know how to engage with others in a different way, how to set boundaries, how to speak your own truth. But to do that, the nervous system has to be calmed down, has to be, people need to be in what we call more your social engagement nervous system, coming out of that freeze response and your fight flight response, coming down into that more, like we say, social engagement nervous system.
What we also call grounding, right?
Yes. Yes.
Grounded. Yeah.
Grounding and the being more in your parasympathetic nervous system rather than being in a high activated state or in that freeze response.
Yeah. Also in a safe space and a not safe space.
Right.
So starting to create that grounding and safe space in the nervous system. It's an actual process that needs to take place in the nervous system.
Yeah. And so I think that those are some things that can begin to help that healing process as people start to say, I really want to explore this in myself. There are things, even as simple thing. Well, I mean, Simba, you teach breathing. Even like the breathing work that you do can be really helpful for people even to be aware of their breathing, not breathing. Just simple awareness, body awareness, I think is a very good place to begin.
Simba, what would you say about TRE and fawning?
Yeah, I think you said a lot already. It's about that felt sense. I think for me, what I learned both from you and from Lorianne in TRE is a lot about grounding and how to look at Stephen Porges' work, the polyvagal theory, as a way for people to really start to have a vocabulary to see where am I at, right? Because right now we're teaching terms, grounding, dissociation, and you don't know when you're in it if you haven't had someone guide you through it, right? You kind of need to come out of it to realize, wow, this is actually going on, right? So I, like usually when I talk about it, when I teach TRE in general, I spend a quite big piece on education to really give people juicy examples, as I call it, right? Like real life examples, right? Like I used to work at a very mundane job that I didn't like at all, at a storage way out in the middle of nowhere. And I used to remember waking up at work, wondering how did I get here? And I actually took a shower, I had breakfast, I went to my car, and I drove like half an hour, and I have no memory how it's like I woke up at work, right? And that was like, when I start to explain it, that was like a way of dissociation for me, right? Like my body was on autopilot, but it was like no one was home, or the opposite, that my mind is fully focused on a task. I sit in front of the computer and I work for hours, and then I come out of it and I'm like, stiff, I'm hungry. So I spend a lot of time explaining that with examples so people can kind of go, oh, that's why I do this. Okay, now I can tie this information to a behavior that I do. And whenever I find myself in that behavior in the future, like you said, I can use breathing, the heartbeat, I can come back to those resources and kind of train my brain and nervous system to do something else, right? To see that there are options that can come out of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the beautiful thing with TRE that I feel is that it's that it's releasing the stress and the trauma or the unfinished stress responses in the body in a very, very safe, and it's like you don't have to talk about the trauma or whatever. You don't even have to know. You can just do the exercises and release the tension from the nervous system, and the grounding will automatically start to happen. I mean, we don't know exactly how long it's going to take before people, but it's a very, very, very cool tool that is super effective and that can really start to make the organism or the person feel safe again. Mm-hmm. And I like what you said, that you need to do the regulation of the nervous system and have someone help you with like identifying the behaviors, maybe identifying the situations, mm-hmm. helping to retrain the person. What can I do instead? Having new tools, like management, like those two mm-hmm. things.
Absolutely. I mean, just even language, having the language to be able to talk about things with people that maybe in the past you've just shut down, you just please, but you've never engaged in communication and conversation. Those are skills that, and part of them are, they are skills. We, you know, if we haven't learned those skills, we need to learn those skills to be able to go to the next step with dealing with the situation from a more grounded, socially engaged place versus being in that disconnected, dissociated, pleasing place. And and so it's like anything, you know, things that we try to change in ourselves is work, but the work is often pays off. And in ways we'll never understand or even know at this point. When you start the journey, you don't know where it's going to take you. But in the end, in my own experience of taking on things in my own life, I mean, it's been amazing. The results far greater and better than I could have thought, because I had no idea. Yeah. And so I mean, that's the gift in the work that people do, you know, is the,
yeah,
put the time, energy, and resources into it, and then wait for the gift to appear.
Yeah, that's very interesting that you mentioned that, because a lot of people see it like all this work that needs to be done, mm-hmm. or like the inner work, it's so heavy, or it's painful, or this and that. Excuse me. But for me, and what I see also in the people that we work with, is like, the gift is just so much greater than the work that is needed mm-hmm. to be done. It's just, there's no, it's not equivalent at all. It's like mm-hmm. the gift, like you say, like the gifts, it's the gift that just keep on giving. You don't know. It's just unwrapping more things. Mm-hmm. Like with the people pleasing, when I realized, wow, I really do that. Like, and that wasn't that far long ago that I saw mm-hmm. these subtle changes. And then seeing that, and working with that, that gave me so much more than just not people pleasing anymore, because it was a nervous system response. And when the nervous system, when I heal that, I also heal other things automatically.
Lovely. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Super cool. Do you have any additional comments, Simba?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about safety, right? I think that's the main thing also from Stephen Porges' job with grounding. You're talking about being safe, you know, that I'm actually, like, I'm looking around myself in the room right now, I know I'm safe, but that doesn't mean that I feel safe, right? I have experiences from the past that is triggering the fear scanning amygdala, right, in the brain. So my mind might be racing all the time and I don't actually have that felt sense, right? I can't really connect to it. And I think the embodiment and starting to go into the bodies are ways to really recognize that. Remember one training that we had when we were working with other health practitioners and therapists and counselors, and the teacher was saying, from a scale of 0 to 10, 10 is as safe as you can be right now, how safe do you feel? And this is like professionals working, right? And everyone was saying like 8, 9, that chair can follow me, that lamp can follow me. And they said, has it? No, right? So like, that's just what we carry with us, right? And that we can just amplify it by not being present, right? Right now, nothing has actually happened. I'm here, I'm breathing, I'm safe. So I really believe that is a big part. And then what you mentioned, in part might be in the nervous system, but other part might be behavioral as well, right? And if it's behavior, then you probably need someone that has more training and qualification that can really retrain us and teach us in a way how to come out of it, right? You might need more than someone that works with your nervous system or body work, right? You might need someone that can actually guide you through a process, because there might be steps in your life that we haven't developed, right? Because that's what happens with trauma. We don't allow ourselves, or we don't feel safe enough to develop certain steps as we grow up. And I think anger is a big one.
Oh yeah.
People are not allowed to be angry. And as soon as you express, I mean, if you have healthy anger, that's just saying, okay, this is my space. That's enough. That's a boundary. But we're not taught to do that. We're punished, right? So then what you were saying, Joan, this fear comes up. I don't want to have a conflict because that might lead to, and we just shut down. So I'm curious, what would you say? How could it be a good way to start to explore healthy anger in a
Whoa. I think that's a whole other podcast.
we have a new episode.
Yeah,
because I mean anger is certainly there's a lot to explore around anger and people's suppression of their anger and their expression of anger, you know, everything around, and the fact that we and definitely in fawning, you know, if we connect fawning with anger, often anger triggers fawning because that was part of what caused fear in the past, right? Either the other person's anger and the person who's fawning isn't even connected with their anger or their fear sometimes, because it's been disconnected from often. So I think that's a whole other conversation. It's a good one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what I see is that when people are becoming, when they are starting to ground their nervous system and starting to feel more safe and work with providers such as Simba and I, we see the anger coming out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
when the fawning stops and they start to put their healthy boundaries, and they do that a couple of times, and then the anger just boom.
Yeah, I had my own experience of that the first time where I remember truly feeling anger, and that wasn't until I was probably in my 30s, to be truthful, having my first experience. And I had been in therapy for a long time, in bioenergetic therapy, and as a client, and I was at a store and somebody stepped right in front of me to go to the counter to the cashier, and I just raised my voice and said, "I'm next, you get behind me," and I just shocked the heck out of me. And that was my first time really ever embracing my own anger and acting on it. Now, it sort of scared me too, but I had to learn how to express it once it started to rise in me. And that opening of anger actually was the beginning of me beginning to feel it. And thank heavens I was having support around that, because sometimes you can cause more problems in your life if you're not able to learn the expression of anger along with the feeling and expression of it. So that just reminded me of that story, because that was a pretty powerful, exciting experience for me. At the same time, it was like, oh no, I'm starting to feel angry, dear heavens.
Yeah, I mean, it's not pleasant.
No.
Not for you or anyone else.
No, well, particularly other people. They don't like it when you change.
Oh, they don't like it when you change. Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes people have difficulty with that. That's the other side of the personal growth and change process, right? Yeah. Is that as we change and grow and develop, it changes our dynamics with others. And sometimes people have difficulty with that change in our lives. And we have to be prepared for that. That can be sometimes the consequence. So there's both the upside of the gift, and there can be the downside of our personal growth and change. Yeah. Yeah, we have to be able to embrace both of those.
Yeah. Fawning, very, very interesting. So I would say that, so Simba, would you be able to guide someone through both the nervous system regulation and the behavioral process?
Depends on where they're at and what has happened to them. I would have to see where they're coming from, right? Because usually I meet people when they have tried something, so they have a little bit of information. I'm usually not the first person that they meet when it comes to this. I might be able to do it. It's hard to say straight up, right? I have done it for a lot of people, definitely. But it's two pieces, really, I think, right? One is the nervous system regulation, and the second one is just, like you said, to have the support. And the support might not just be one-on-one. It might be a community, right? That you're mm-hmm. the right time, in the right space, and you're in a community that, like you said, Joan, can accept these things that comes up, right? Because otherwise people are like, well, what's going on? And then you might retract even more. So yes, definitely, that's something I do work with. I would need to talk to the person to see if we're good.
I mean, that's implied, of course.
Yeah, but I think skill is important, definitely, the professional skill, the country and the liability, of course, what kind of credentials you have. But most important, I think it's the personal connection you make to someone. You can go to the best trauma therapist, counselor, whatever in the world, and if you don't feel safe, if you don't feel a connection with that person, I don't think anything of depth is going to happen. I don't really think so. So it's more of a personal connection. If I make that personal connection with the person, 100% I can do that, not a problem. So I look at it more like this. Is this something we can do together? Are we aligned? Are we speaking the same language? Have we met at the right time and space in life? Then yeah, then I can definitely do that.
So if someone is interested in TRE, then they could reach out for a personal consultation.
Definitely. We do personal consultations, we can do online sessions, and we also have a provider training program.
Oh, yes.
Starting in October, next one.
And that is to become the TRE provider, to teach the TRE, yeah.
Yes. And the first part of that is called Module 1. It's a two-day workshop, and that can be done standalone, right? You don't have to do the whole program. That could be done for you to learn about all these things and terms we were throwing around here today with about the nervous system, have an experience of it, and start to get to know yourself, your own nervous system, and the tool, the TRE tool.
Yeah, we will have a couple of module ones coming up this year, so stay tuned for that. If you have any questions about fawning, about people pleasing, if you have any follow-up questions, just reach out to us on any social media or through our website, livingwiththespirit.com. If you have questions about the TRE training, you can just reach out to us the same way. And if you're looking for to see if we are a good fit to work together with fawning or any kind of nervous system situations or safety and grounding in general, you can always sign up for a free consultation on our website, livingwiththespirit.com. So I thank you both for having this conversation, and I truly hope that you will be back, Joan, to talk about more topics.
Yeah, I would look forward to that very much. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everyone. I will just stop the stream, Joan, so you don't have to plug out or anything. So I just say bye-bye to our audience, and see you next time. Ciao.
Bye.